You're listening to the Student Leadership Programme podcast.
Hello, my name is Abby Rich and I'm a newly qualified midwife working in Devon, and today I'm joined by Vari McClellan and Jane Cardwell, who are both also newly qualified midwives. I'll just start with a little bit about myself. So as I say, I work in Devon as a midwife. I trained at the University of Plymouth and was in the 150 leaders cohort, I think of 2019. That could be wrong. Time has gone quite quickly. Oh, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. In my second year of university, I applied, which was a very busy year, and it definitely kind of framed my degree quite nicely. At the moment, I work in a continuity of care model as a midwife. So I work within a team of 8 midwives, and I provide care across the antenatal, intrapartum and postnatal period. So I get a nice mix of things. And just to throw it on top, I'm doing a master's part-time as well over the next 3 years. So I keep myself busy, to say the least. Vari, do you want to say a little bit about what you're up to?
Yeah, so I'm Vari McClellan. I'm also a newly qualified midwife. I work in the Highlands of Scotland. I work on the Isle of Skye and also on the mainland. We are sort of caseloading in the sense that we have a caseload, but our nearest obstetric unit is 2 hours away from our midwife-led unit. So we don't do like 100% continuity or anything like that. We do have lots of women who have local births, either in our midwife-led unit or who have home births. So we do get the intrapartum side of things, and we do go on call for the women on our caseload and things like that. So usually it is their named midwife that is there for the birth. Sometimes we go through to the obstetric unit for things like planned sections. So there is kind of continuity in that sense as well. But unfortunately, we kind of can't have 100% continuity, which is a bit of a shame. But we are kind of looking at ways where we can kind of improve that for the women that do go through to the obstetric unit. I also did the 150 Leaders Student Leadership Programme. So I did it in 2018, so when I was in my first year. And yeah, similar to what you said, Abby, about it kind of sort of bookending your midwifery degree, I think it really helped to sort of shape what I then went on to do, because I did it early on in my kind of journey. And I think that was something that was a bit tricky for me. I was like, I don't know if I can really apply for a leadership programme when I'm only in first year. But yeah, it really helped to kind of shape what then I kind of did after that. So yeah, that's I'm not doing a master's yet, but I am sort of in the process of applying for hopefully starting a master's in September, which I'll also be doing alongside working. So yes, I think we're quite similar in the yeah, being busy definitely. Thing.
Busy.
Yeah.
Lovely. And Jane?
Hi, I'm Jane Cardwell, and I, sort of similar to Abby, was in my second year when I did the student leadership programme. So I was hoping that you remember the date, Abby, because I wasn't sure. Yes. I think it was 2019. It's been a bit of a blur this past year. So yeah, I did it in my second year of studying midwifery at Queen's University in Belfast, and then I just qualified then last year. So I'm a newly qualified midwife working in a maternity unit in Belfast, in one of the hospitals in Belfast, and I'm working on a mixed antenatal and postnatal ward at the minute, so my experience is a little bit different. We don't have a whole lot of continuity. Obviously, if there are some women in antenatally, we'll also see them postnatally, but that's the extent of it really. Something that we're planning to work on in the future, trying to get a bit more continuity introduced into that maternity unit, but we're not quite there yet.
Lovely, yeah.
I'm trying to think, I'm just thinking as well, I've been contemplating my master's as well. It's been a bit of a busy year for me. I've got 2 young children, so I've been trying to homeschool as well. So I kind of had thought about starting my master's this September, but I think I'm going to hold off for a year just while I recover from last year.
Definitely. Lovely. So yeah, we've got kind of like a mix of experiences, and obviously we're geographically quite different, which I think is quite nice. How have you found being a newly qualified midwife, you know, COVID or without COVID? How has it been kind of your journey so far?
Yeah, I think my experience is probably fairly typical in terms of the emotional roller coaster that is being a newly qualified midwife. Where I work is maybe a wee bit different than for some people, in that we can be at times, the diary can look quite quiet, to use the word that everybody hates. Mm-hmm. But it's just because we do have quite a number of midwives, because the on-call commitment can be quite high, but also just like geographically. The other day, for example, just in the course of one 9-to-5 shift, I drove 140 miles between visits. So I maybe didn't see that many people, but it was a, you know, it was a busy day. So I think that side of things has been, I knew that was going to be a bit of a challenge as a newly qualified midwife, because obviously if I had gone and worked maybe in the obstetric unit that our NHS board kind of has, then I would see a lot more volume of people, and I would probably be getting lots of experience that I'm not getting here. But then equally, there's a lot of experience that I'm getting here that I just wouldn't get there. So it was always a kind of weighing up for me, and I think I've made the right choice. it's hard to know sometimes. I'm planning to, I wanted to kind of get myself a bit more settled here first, but I am going to join the bank in our kind of obstetric unit so that I can do a bit of shifts kind of on the, you know, like the antenatal ward, the postnatal ward, that kind of thing, just to kind of keep my skills up in that side of things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the same for everybody, that it's been a massive learning curve. You kind of, I think you get to the end of third year and you sort of think, right, I kind of sort of know what I'm doing now. And then you kind of step out on day one as a qualified midwife and you're like, wait a minute, I know nothing.
Yeah.
I know nothing. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'm lucky my team is really kind of supportive and everything. So yeah, but I imagine it's been similar for you guys as well.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there completely, because I remember thinking the same thing at the end of my third year. It's like, I feel like I'm getting this. I feel like I can do this. And then it's just, it's been such a steep learning curve. I think I realised as soon as I started as a newly qualified midwife how sheltered I'd been as a student. It's definitely been a steep learning curve. I think that's been challenging in itself, but I suppose people had always told me it was going to be like that, like, you know, so it wasn't completely unexpected. But I think probably the biggest challenge for me has probably been the challenges that have come about because of COVID. I think just being in the hospital, on an antenatal and postnatal ward, obviously with you know, with lots of restrictions on visitors and the partners being there, that's been like obviously a very challenging time for the women, so very challenging time for us then as midwives looking after those women, because you're completely empathizing with their situations, but also having to deal with the restrictions in place. I found it quite emotional. It's had a bit of an emotional toll on me, I think. You know, you're trying to do your job as best as possible, you're trying to be, you know, be the midwife, be with the women, but it's also been, I feel like we've had a constant baby boom from November through to January, so it's also been very busy. So yeah, there's been a lot of challenges there, but at the same time I feel like the environment I'm in, I'm very fortunate to be in such a great team. We're all very supportive of each other and all sort of facing those challenges together, and you know, at times in our slightly quieter times we're able to sort of sit and reflect together on, you know, are we doing, what else can we do for the women that we're caring for? Is it, what else can we do to help out? And obviously advocate for women whenever there have been situations where we felt like, no, they really need to have a partner with them right now. So we need to go and speak to the sister and advocate for them and get their partner in for a visit.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely been, you know, I'd agree. The visiting restrictions and sometimes explaining that to people, and obviously in highly emotive situations, quite often they've just had a baby, or perhaps they're being induced, or they're being kept in for a high risk reason, and you know, the restrictions are in place, that they are on their own majority of that time without kind of a partner with them. And it's really difficult, and I totally understand. And it's very, you know, emotive. And when you, FaceTime, I've seen used so much now at the moment, births, you know, babies just born and mom or mother-in-law's on FaceTime. And because typically, you know, they would be there, as we've just got one birth partner in labour. But what we have seen as a result actually is quite a steep increase in home births. Very popular option, and a lot of people thinking, well, why didn't I do this before? And I think that's an interesting thing I've seen recently, is that more people are sort of interested in that. We don't have a midwife-led unit at my trust. We just have our obstetric unit. So it's obstetric unit or home birth, sort of not an in-between. And historically, we had a home birth team, whereas now, obviously, if a woman presents in labour or calls in labour for a home birth, someone from her team will go out to us, out to her at home. So that's been good for skill mix. I haven't actually been out to a home birth myself yet, but they're increasing quite a bit, which is good to see. But yeah, similarly, it's been a steep learning curve. There was, I think, 10 of us, newly qualified midwives, that started. And 2 weeks after we started, so we did our supernumerary, they launched the continuity of care model for the whole unit. So all of us suddenly went into this new way of working, you know, experienced staff alike. And I've really valued the support of others. And actually, something I think as a student, I felt this big pressure that I had to be really good. Everyone was watching me. If I wasn't good, I was going to be judged. If I asked questions, or if you know, I got the answer wrong, I'd feel this immense pressure that was just ridiculous. And actually, I've qualified and thought, why did I put that pressure on myself? There's not this pressure. There's so many people to ask questions to. So the learning curve is being made by a lot easier by just compassion of others. I think good leadership from my seniors has been really, really fantastic in that. So yeah, 6 months in and I'm loving it though. Loving it.
I think what you say about compassion is so important. I think there's probably quite a lot of student midwives, and I'm sure student nurses and AHPs alike, who had that same experience of kind of, I think it's almost that, like, feeling like you're in a goldfish bowl when you're a student, and absolutely everything you say and do is being watched. And so you kind of feel like you've got to always be on. You can never have a bad day. You can never have an off moment. You feel like you say, that anytime you get asked a question, you have to know the answer. And it made me feel like, well, if I don't know the answers now, you know, when I'm a qualified midwife, well, I'm gonna have to know the answers. And it's like, well, actually, nobody ever knows all the answers to everything. There's always going to be things, you know. I see the midwives who've been qualified years asking each other advice, just, you know, what would you do in this situation, because every woman is unique, every situation is unique. You may have come across her particular circumstances before, but it's not going to be a carbon copy, because everyone's different. So, you know, I think, yeah, that's been quite nice. I think I've kind of taking the pressure off myself a little bit as well, of like, actually asking questions is good. It would be quite concerning if at our stage we were like, it's fine, we know everything, because that's not a good attitude for for a midwife. So yeah,
definitely.
I think, as you say, it's just been so encouraging to see really experienced midwives asking questions too, because it completely does take the pressure off. You realize that I don't need to know everything. Obviously, you need to try and know as much as possible, but it's always an environment where you can ask each other questions and get advice. And sometimes I find, even as being newly qualified, sometimes you do have the answer yourself, because you know, from having been a student, some of those policies back to front.
Yeah.
Or you at least know where to look for them, and you can bring some of your knowledge and experience from university into the mix as well, which is helpful.
Is there anything you feel like from the student leadership program has really helped you as a newly qualified midwife?
I think particularly because I went into the student leadership program as a first year, kind of thinking, I don't really know anything about leadership. I'm interested in leadership. And I think the way the program was advertised made me think it wasn't just about people who were kind of in leadership positions. And I think it's made me feel more confident to kind of question things in an appropriate way, but, you know, kind of saying, actually, is this the best way that we could do this? Is there maybe another way to do this? And I think asking those questions doesn't necessarily change anything straight away, but that if we're not even questioning things, then nothing is ever gonna kind of change. And there's lots of things that we do in my area that I think are fantastic. And there's other ways that perhaps maybe we could be doing things better. And I think, yeah, having the sort of confidence to be like, actually, things can change, things can get better, is quite important. And I definitely think that's something that I kind of learned on the student leadership program.
I've definitely kind of agree that. I think, you know, as a student, I started kind of implementing some of those, you know, having that bit more confidence to be like, yeah, but why are we doing it like that? But why don't we try, you know, something different? Or I've seen this on Twitter, for instance. As a midwife, I think I've definitely taken that kind of inquiry, as you say, in a sensible way, in a kind of just a subtle, not, you know, not that I feel like I'm overstepping the mark as such, but that actually is nearly, just because you're newly qualified doesn't mean that your opinion is any less than someone that's been qualified for a long time, and actually not feeling like you need permission to do things. At the end of my degree, when I was applying for the master's, I tried to keep it really quiet because I knew people had very strong views about it. And now I'm doing it and kind of not feeling like I need permission from someone to say, oh no, that's okay that you do that, you know, you're newly qualified and you do that. It's actually, well, the confidence to say, well, what I want to do, it's in alignment with perhaps my vision, and I'm gonna do it. I'm not gonna feel that just because I'm newly qualified doesn't mean I have to turn down opportunities or not do things out of fear of what someone else thinks. I think that, you know, the especially a lot of the speakers that came to talk to us really kind of focused on that idea of, you know, you do you. At the end of the day, it's you and your career, your life. And sometimes you do have to kind of rock the boat, and it's not always a negative thing.
Yeah, I think totally. I think we talked a lot in the student leadership program about being authentic. And I think that really helped me, because when I came into it, I've never associated myself with the sort of traditional ideas of what leadership is. I'm quite a quiet, kind of introspective person, like maybe quietly confident, but not maybe necessarily outwardly. So I would never have thought of myself as a leader in any way. But I think the program just really helped me build confidence in who I was as a person and my own particular brand of leadership. So kind of similar to your experiences, like I've found it has helped me at times just have the confidence to, in an appropriate way, kind of challenge some of what is done on a daily basis. You know, why are we doing this? Why do I need to, is there an indication for me to put this CTG on? You know, why are we doing that? Is it because we just do it twice daily? Or why, you know, what is the indication? And kind of starting to challenge maybe just some things that are there. I think it's also helped just give me a bit of confidence with some trying some new things as well. Just as, I don't know why I signed up for this, because I was obviously busy with homeschooling, but I trained to be a vaccinator as well. So just something a little bit different. And I've just really enjoyed that experience actually as well. And at the minute, it's been like funny. Yes, I had a vaccination shift yesterday, and there's a couple of people came through that I had looked after in the postnatal ward. So it was quite nice this sort of seeing them again and having that element of continuity and having a bit of a chat with them. But it's been really good experience in that way. And I feel like it's just given me a bit of confidence, the student leadership program, to kind of try new things and just be a bit more confident in myself. So I'm quite into sort of sharing information, like so much wrong information out there at the minute, so many fake news. So I think, I don't know, I sort of just morphed into this sort of role of on Facebook and social media, just sort of sharing evidence-based information. And I found like a lot of people who didn't even know were pregnant were liking, like, thank you so much for sharing that. And sort of made me realize that, you know, we are so fortunate because we know all the places to go to look for this evidence-based information. And sometimes it's quite a minefield for anybody who's outside of that. So it's, yeah, we're in quite a privileged situation where we're able to easily access information and share it. So that's been, I don't know, something I've kind of been doing a lot of recently and finding it quite useful.
I know that the applications are reopening for the Student Leadership Programme in April, which is exciting. I'm always doing my bit to tell student midwives that they should apply. And obviously, there's a lot of student nurses on the programme. I believe in mine and Jane's, we had 5 student midwives, which was fantastic. It was really nice to meet other student midwives, but also to kind of mix with allied health professionals and find out about professions perhaps I didn't really know a lot about. And also have all those people in one room that were quite, you know, fairly ambitious and had these ideas and really wanted to, really passionate about their careers, which is what I really loved about the 150 leaders. I loved the fact that we stayed up late talking. You learned so much. People were just, wow, you know, such an atmosphere to be part of. What sort of advice or what would you encourage us, why would you encourage a student midwife to go forth and apply for the programme this time around?
I think, kind of what you've said is, yeah, very much my experience, and I think it's something I would encourage other people to do as well. But that experience of being in a room full of not just other kind of healthcare profession students, but those that are really keen and those that are, you know, I said this and I've heard lots of other people say almost exactly the same thing, but it was really nice to be in a room full of people and for once not be one of the only people kind of contributing and mm-hmm. and kind of getting involved and feeling as passionate as I do. And it's not to suggest that everybody else in my cohort wasn't as passionate or what didn't contribute, but I think sometimes people contribute in their own way, and that kind of putting their hand up in class or things like that isn't something that feels right for them. But it was nice to be in this room full of people where everybody seemed to care, you know. And so yeah. I think if that's how you feel, you know, if you are a midwifery student that's kind of like, you know, I'm really passionate about this, I care about this, I really want to make a difference, then it's just such a nice energy and such a nice feeling to be in this room full of people. They're not all going to be student midwives, you know, as you say, it's a totally multi-professional kind of group of people, but you know, just the energy that you get from being in a room full of people that all just want to kind of make changes and improve things. And yeah, it just it's an incredible feeling, and it will help to give you the kind of energy and the drive that you need to make it through the degree, because yeah, you know, at times the degree is really tough.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think there was a particularly dark time for me in second year, and I know second year for some people is the hardest, and it definitely was the hardest for me. And I think if I didn't have the kind of extra drive and push from the things that I'd done in the student leadership program, the people that I'd met and the projects that I was involved in, I wonder if at times I might have felt that actually I didn't want to continue. I can't know, obviously, but you know, I wonder if that was the driving force that kind of helped me push through and kind of make it to the end, which obviously I'm very happy I did.
Yes.
So I think, you know, it's not just what you get out of the program in terms of, you know, the networking and the access to the kind of people that you kind of can chat to and learn from and all obviously the learning outcomes from the program. It really has a more long-term effect than that, that yeah, you kind of have to do to see, but yeah, that's why I would really recommend it.
That energy and it kind of reignites that passion, you know, that you have for your profession. And obviously, you know, you go into a profession because that's what you're interested in doing. Yeah, I totally found that big boost. Obviously, I did it in my second year, and that first meeting, that sort of February March time, that was really needed. And then again when we met up in the summer, just such good energy. And yeah, totally agree that there are times that I thought this is really hard, but it gave me that bit more kind of purpose and drive to keep going through and finish it.
100%. I think I find the same. I think second year in my degree program was probably the toughest of the 3 years. It was very, very heavy on theory. And there was just times I was like, this is so difficult. I don't know, can I do this? But yeah, I think having that support network of everybody else, kind of even in different degree programs going through it all, but also having that passion and that motivation and that drive, you know, was also really inspiring. And I think as well. Like, it was just what I found so good about meeting people from different backgrounds was realizing that even though we're in different degree programs and different pathways, you know, we're, a lot of us face similar challenges within our professions. And it's really interesting just to even get together and think about, well, what can we do about this within our different professions and borrow ideas from each other. I thought that was really, really interesting and just, yeah, just really inspiring time. I think definitely helped get me through. And yeah, it just still is, I think, something it will always stay with me. The learning from that program, just that buzz in the room that was there and just that real passion and drive and enthusiasm. There's, yeah, it's hard to forget that, yeah, for sure.
Definitely.
I think for me, it was also like a feeling of finding my tribe finally. And you know, I made friends at uni and stuff, but I think that coming in as a mature student, because I was 29 when I started the degree, I think it's sometimes a bit harder to sort of make friends. And because I moved from where I was living for uni, I kind of didn't really know anybody in Aberdeen where I studied. So it was quite nice sort of finding this tribe that then became like an online community, you know, through WhatsApp groups and kind of following each other on Twitter and things like that. And yeah, it was nice to kind of, yeah, find a tribe.
And it was always nice to have a tribe that included people that weren't at uni with day in, day out, or on placement, or even in the same profession with, just to, because, you know, as you said, Jane, we all had similar, you know, experiences and problems, but we were in different professions, and it was nice to come together and work out how we address those within our own professions. So what sort of things are you up to now, and what's your kind of looking forward sort of plans with things?
I think for me, I sort of, as I said before, I've sort of been contemplating a bit of further education. I almost applied for a PhD last week and then realised that this is really maybe not the right time. It was on continuity of care, and it was like, it's a real passion project for me. So I was like, oh, this is ideal, but not the ideal time. Yeah. Ideal topic, but not the ideal time. So I was just like, oh, I had a lot of thinking to do about that. But no, my plan had always been when I finished university to kind of do a master's within the first couple of years of finishing, so I think I'll probably still go down that route. But yeah, I think for me at the minute, it's just, I've been doing lots of training. So obviously I'm in the antenatal postnatal ward at the minute, but I'm rotating to delivery suite in May, so I've just been making sure that I'm up to date with my training before I go to that ward. So I've been doing my cannulation and all my bits and pieces, perineal suturing, all that sort of training, just to prepare myself for going there. So I'm kind of hitting the ground running. I'm also a bit, to be honest, I'm a bit scared because I haven't been in a delivery suite since for a year now, probably over a year actually. So yeah, I think that's probably one of the downfalls of not having that continuity of care model going on, because you feel so out of it once you, if you're in a particular area for any period of time, you're not doing something else that you kind of feel like you're missing out on. So yeah, so I suppose for me at the minute, it's just trying to make sure I'm up to date with all my training, and in terms of planning for the future, just kind of keeping an eye out for those different academic opportunities and anything else that comes up really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of similar in terms of trying to do all that sort of newly qualified training stuff that we can. I think I was saying to Abby on Twitter that we were newly qualified midwife twinning when we were doing our cannulation training the same week, I think the thing that's kind of a little bit tricky in my area is we don't have to do that stuff very often. So, you know, I did like my IV drugs training and my cannulation training because there is occasional times when we do need to do it. And you know, I did have an experience recently. It turned out all to be fine, but I was on an ambulance transfer with two ambulance technicians rather than paramedics, so they can't cannulate and neither could I. And it's a 2-hour transfer, and everything turned out to be fine, but it was just one of those situations where it really brought home to me that actually, although we don't do it that often, it is skills that, you know, could potentially be quite important in kind of an emergency situation. I think the tricky thing though, if you're not using it often, is how do you then keep up your competency in those skills? So I think that's where doing some bank shifts in the kind of hospital that's sort of 2 hours away will help me to sort of keep up those skills. Also, like I said, applying for hopefully to do a health research master's in September. I'm kind of doing it the flip side way from you, Abby. I'm going to do it full time and so drop my hours a bit in terms of, you know, my role as a midwife. I'm going to kind of drop my hours a bit so that I can focus on the master's full time, but still working to kind of keep my skills up and continue developing as a newly qualified midwife. So yeah, we'll see. I've applied for some funding and stuff to help fund it as well. So hopefully all that will pan out, but it's just the kind of waiting game to see what happens. I applied for the RCM's first 5 years forum. So it's specific to Scotland. I think it's over the last few years has done really well. So I hope it's something that they might roll out in kind of other parts of the UK, because I think it has been a real benefit for the midwives who've been involved in it. And I think where I am, I'm the only newly qualified midwife, and I'm not even sure that there's any newly qualified nurses here at the moment. So it's like I'm really kind of, I feel a little bit sort of cut off a little bit from, you know, that experience that you maybe get if you're in a bigger area where, you know, there could be two or three or even more kind of newly qualified midwives, and you can sort of, or even if it's people that qualified a year or two ago, that you can kind of build a bit of a community with. And obviously there are opportunities to do that online, but I really thought that this would kind of benefit me a lot in that way. So the first 5 years forum is a forum of 25 newly qualified midwives. So you have to be a year qualified to join, and anywhere up to kind of 5 years qualified. So I found out recently that I got a place, which is great.
Congratulations. Fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you. So my first meeting will be in September. So I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, fab. Yeah, that'll be fantastic. And yeah, as someone who has got kind of nine others newly qualified midwives that I have to bounce off, as well as, you know, several who have qualified in the last few years and who I was with as students and things, that support is so important. That person to go, did you know that? No, oh, that's fine. Yeah, it is really nice. And we have a group chat, and so it's really lovely. It's been there's one that actually trained elsewhere, and we haven't been able to meet with her outside work because of COVID. So we're looking forward to actually getting to know her, not in our uniforms, and kind of, yeah, forming those bonds. So yeah, I think the forum sounds fantastic, and it's something that I've been talking with my student leadership coach, actually, Carmel Lloyd, who's head of education at the RCM, regarding whether that's something we could set up in England. Because I think it is, I think it's so important to have that network of support. And there's so much around students, and that's really fantastic. But obviously, we know like things like the repair report show that you're more likely to leave in the first couple of years after you qualify. And actually, how do we capture and stop that? And make sure that we keep our midwives and keep people that are passionate about the job in the job. So yeah, it would be good. I'm looking forward to seeing how you do with that. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, similar to, you know, as you know, we've been twinning on our skills. I've had a few opportunities to do perinatal suturing, which is like one of those skills as a student you're like, oh my god, and you qualify. And you know, again, fantastic support. If I just wanted someone just to come and just watch me, nobody's ever been like, come on, you know, there's never any, I've not had any rolling eyes, all that I've seen anyway. So opposite to you, we cannulate quite a lot. We've got a high risk population, and also being in an obstetric unit, we you know, everything's kind of centralized to us, and we're also a tertiary unit, so we take people very early on in pregnancy, and also quite high risk conditions, those might deliver prematurely. So IV medications, as soon as they could get me on that training, I needed, you know, to be on it just so I could kind of do quite a lot of the job. Cannulation, I've not had the opportunity to cannulate yet, which is, I'm very anxious about that. Not a big fan of having cannulas in myself, so putting someone else I'm not keen on. I'm also trying to get my newborn infant physical examination signed off, which I really love doing. So that's quite nice. But I'm joining a new continuity team in the next few months. So at the minute, I don't have my own caseload of women. I do a lot of kind of pick up extras, do a lot of postnatal care in the community. So I'm going to have my own caseload of women, which I'm looking forward to. I'm a bit like an organisation freak. So I'm looking forward to a little organisation and being like, oh, here's my laminated posters of the birthing process. We're going to go through this today. We're setting up a hypnobirthing service within our trust, which I'm part of, which I'm looking forward to. I did that training, I think, 2 days before lockdown last year. So that was good timing. And obviously with my master's and things, that's keeping me busy on the side. But I'm loving it. And as you say, I really wanted to keep that clinical aspect because I want to keep developing those skills. And ultimately, whatever I do, I always want to keep, you know, some of that clinical. But yeah, for me now, my next kind of train of thought with things is, at what point do I think about starting a family of my own? And where does that fit into someone who wants to work and do this? And yeah, so that's my next sort of path of research, is talking to some midwives that have carried on doing things like this, but also have a family. So we'll see how that goes.
I think, yeah, that's something I kind of echo as well. And it's actually something that I was thinking about back when I did the student leadership program. Mm. I mean, I know I was the year before you guys, so I don't know if you got asked what kind of mentor you wanted, or coach on the program. I think they changed the name to coaches. Mm. But one of the things I'd said was that I really wanted somebody who was female, because and ideally somebody that had kids. I didn't know if they had that information about the mentors or the coaches, but I kind of wanted to know, and maybe Jane, you'll be able to talk about this a bit as well, but I kind of wanted to know, you know, as a woman, I mean, I know we're, you know, in 2021 and hopefully things have improved, but yeah. I still look at it as, you know, it is hard for women to have everything, to have a career and raise their families and potentially, you know, at some point I'm kind of like, something has to give, because I'd love to do like a PhD or a clinical doctorate or something as well. And I'm kind of like, and I'm interested in research and I'm interested in leadership and I'm interested in all this stuff and I really want to do it. And I'm like, yeah, okay, but well, at a certain point something has to give, because if you want a family, you know, you have to be there for your family. Mm. And I mean, I don't know, Jane, how you found it, like, particularly with homeschooling and stuff like that. It's like, how do you keep all of those balls in the air?
I suppose, you know, it was actually my previous job. Someone said to me, Jane, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And that's probably some of the best advice that I've ever been given, because I am this type of person who I want to be doing everything, you know, now, but, you know, it is just, you know, take your time, find the balance that works for you. Just because you have a family doesn't mean there are lots of things you can't do. Like throughout the whole student leadership program, I was doing that whilst full-time uni and I had two young children, like was able to get involved in midwifery society. You know, you find the balance that works for you, and it's a lot of trial and error, I suppose, about, you know, what's too much and what can you do. Sometimes you do have to say no to things because you just go, I can't physically take one anymore. But just because you say no now to things doesn't mean you're going to be no next year or no the year after. You know, just, you know, it's about taking your time, finding what balance works for you, finding what is enough to sort of, I suppose, satisfy you in terms of, am I doing what I want to be doing right now, but am I also spending the amount of time with my family that I want to? And things like, well, for me, for example, what I really found useful was in where I work at the minute, we're allowed to request every month, we're allowed to kind of request 6 days where we don't work. So I always tend to put those more towards the weekend. My husband's off. So that's family time. So that's like protected family time for me. So that has been really beneficial for me, because no matter how busy the week is, no matter what's going on with homeschooling or anything else, and how busy work's been, I always have this protected time quite a lot at the weekends for me, which was is what I sort of choose to do. And I suppose, yes, there have been things like I've spoken to, like just there now about, I said no to a PhD, which looked really good, but it was just like, you know, there will be other opportunities. This isn't the only opportunity to do a PhD. This isn't the only opportunity to do further academic study. And it's just about finding what fits at the right time and kind of thinking logically and practically about things too. Like I was all, like everyone I spoke to was like, yeah, I think this is really good, you should do it. And I was like, no, I'm going to go and speak to someone who's currently doing a PhD and see how do they find. For me, I was worried about how do I balance doing a full-time PhD with also, like, I'm just a newly qualified midwife, I'm just finding my feet, I want to still do clinical practice. And that person said, look, Jane, I really struggle with it, to be honest, and I don't have a family, so you need to think about how that's going to look for you. And I was like, you know what, that's kind of what I needed to hear, to be honest. I need to hear like honesty in terms of the how hard it is to balance anyway, and go, you know what, this isn't the time for me, maybe it will be in the future, maybe there's a even better PhD I'm more, even more passionate about that's, you know, on the horizon, or maybe I will never do a PhD, I don't know. But I suppose, you know, life doesn't end when you have children. I suppose like a lot of people go, oh, you've no time. I've always found time. You always have time. You just have to be quite efficient with your time, I think, and quite organized in terms of how your week plays out. But it's a role that you transition into. It's not overnight. Suddenly you go from having all the time in the world to no time. You know, you transition into the role and you find out what works for you, I suppose. I don't know if that answers your question.
I think that's really, really good advice. Yeah, that whole idea that, yeah, you don't have to. And I think that's in my second year, I did end up doing a bit of, right, I'm just going to say yes to absolutely everything, because what if it doesn't come up again, or all of these opportunities disappear? And actually, yeah, it was then I kind of learned that actually things take time, and I need to have patience. And as you say, it is a marathon and definitely not a sprint. And I think I've just got such a thing about being so organized and ahead of time. I'm always like, right, okay, so I'm going to do this then, and then I'm going to do this, and at the same time I'm going to do this. I'm actually taking a step back and kind of thinking, right, what am I doing right now, and what will be.
I think I'm quite like you, Abby, as well. I can go from being zen, sitting, having a cup of tea and a biscuit, to suddenly in a sort of existential crisis within about 5 minutes, because I'm like, but I'm planning to do this and this and this, but what about, you know? And you can just sort of get yourself completely tied up in knots with it. And I think that advice of a marathon rather than a sprint is something I maybe need to like tattoo on the inside of my eyeballs to just kind of remind me. But yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I think a phrase that my mum used to use as well was, what's for you, no go by you. So if it's for you, you know, then something in the universe will make it happen. And I think about the things that I maybe applied for or put myself forward for and didn't get, and was maybe a bit disappointed, and then in the fullness of time it actually transpired that there was a really good reason for that, and that actually, you know, everything has a habit of kind of working out if we kind of look for the positives in things. And so I think your advice is very good, Jane.
Definitely. I think as well, like, you know, there are so many opportunities about, and you do think sometimes, oh, I wish I hadn't passed that up. But there are so many opportunities out there, and sometimes they find you, and sometimes you go looking, and once you do one thing, you'll get asked to do other things. And I find that even with the student leadership program, like whenever people found out I was doing it, then they'd come and go, oh, would you like to get involved in this? And would you like to get involved in this? I think once people realize that you're interested in doing those sorts of things, you know, opportunities do come knocking. And but it's still okay to say, like, I love the idea of this, I'm not at a good time in my life right now to do it, but please do come back and ask me in a year. You know, people do come back and ask you, you know, you keep up those relationships with people and the opportunities will still be there, or there'll be something even better or something a bit different that you hadn't anticipated as well. So yeah, it's about, yeah, there definitely, there's plenty of opportunities out there.
I think I learned that lesson of knowing when to say no the hard way. I'm I mean, I'm quite open about sort of mental health kind of sides of things. I think we should talk about it more often. And I had a bit of a scary experience kind of halfway through my second year, where my partner and I had gone away. It was sort of around about Christmas time. So actually not that far into second year. We'd gone away for a few days and I'd switched off my phone. So I knew I had no work to do. There was no uni work. There was, you know, all the other projects I was involved in were all kind of ticking away and didn't need my attention. So I switched my phone off for the kind of 3 or 4 days that we were away. And on the final day, there was this beautiful bathroom in the place that we were staying. I had another bath. I think I had a bath like twice a day while we were there because the bathroom was so beautiful. And I was in the bath and I couldn't get out of the bath. And I started crying. And my partner was like, what is wrong with you? And eventually I realized the reason I couldn't get out of the bath was because I knew when we left, I had to switch my phone back on. And I was too afraid to put my phone back on because it was everything. It was like the emails that might have been there, the things that I knew that I then had to go back and do. And I was just, it's a bit ridiculous. I mean, I was just sitting in this bath crying. And it, you know, he just kept asking me and asking me and asking me kind of what was wrong until eventually I admitted, like, I think I've bitten off a bit more than I can chew. And so immediately he was like, okay, well, what can you drop? And there was a couple of things that I'd kind of said that I was going to be part of that I just kind of had to go back to them and say, look, I'm really sorry. I know I said that I was going to be involved in this, but actually I've taken on way too much. And it was a hard thing to do because nobody wants to sort of let people down. And thankfully there was things that I had said that I would do, but I hadn't committed to a level where I was really sort of letting anyone down. And I was able to pull back from a couple of things and felt much better for it. And, you know, kind of got through the rest of the academic year and everything. And it was fine. But yeah, that was a massive eye opener for me of like, actually, it doesn't take very much to go from being busy and getting a lot out of the projects that you do to actually kind of tipping over into I'm not coping anymore. So yeah, I think being a bit more discerning about what do I actually have time for, because kind of, you know, at best, if you've taken on too much, at best you're not going to be able to effectively contribute to everything you've taken on, and at worst you're just going to make yourself really unwell.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's such important learning from that experience. I think probably many of us, including myself, have had that where you just kind of, you have in the past reached a breaking point where you go, I can't do anymore, there's just too much going on. And but I think the real learning from that is right, I need to start saying no to things, I need to prioritize my time better, and also realizing, you know, what the feelings coming up to reaching your limit feels like, so you know to, you can anticipate it in the future. If you go, right, no, I'm starting to feel like how I was feeling before, this is time to start, like, stop saying yes to things right now and not taking on anything more. Time to even just take a day off, reset and come back to it. So I think, yeah, awful experience to go through, but also such important learning to come from it as well, you know, in terms of, like you said, you know, learning to say no, learning to, you know whenever you're reaching your limit of what you're able to do.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think that's like a really good takeaway, is that whole point that being authentic, living with in your alignment and taking opportunities that align with what you truly want to do, instead of saying yes or doing, you know, actually I want to do this, I want to do this, and what actually out of those things is really going to give you the most value and feel like you're making a valued contribution to something that you feel passionate about. And sometimes that is a lot of things at the same time. And it's about stepping back, as you say, and kind of thinking, at the end of the day, it's I need to be the best I can be to put the most and most valued effort into these things. And yeah, I think the leadership program definitely taught me a lot about sometimes saying no is the hardest thing. It's so much harder to say no to something than to just, yep, I'll do that, and actually thinking, no, I'm really sorry. And people are, as you say, so much more understanding than you think, and saying, but I would be interested in the future. And you're not totally outruling that you'd never do it. So yeah, I think that's a good takeaway, is that at the end of the day, you've got to remember yourself in all of this, and that you're a person with a life. And yes, you're a midwife who loves doing lots of things, but you're also a person in your own right with your own home and your own interests. Then you've got to value that. So thank you for joining us today. I hope you've enjoyed kind of some of our potentially slightly ramblings, but we're midwives and that is what we do best. So thank you to the Council of Deans and the Student Leadership Programme for giving us this opportunity today, and for Nadia for organising it. If you want to hear any more about us, then I'm sure our Twitters and things will be linked. And we look forward to hearing what people think about today's episode. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Student Leadership Programme podcast. For more information, visit www.councilofdeans.org.uk/studentleadership.